And good morning. Welcome to Health Essentials. The phone number here at the station is 903-589-8507. In case you're interested in calling and asking a question. I kind of like it when people are highly curious. I like it when they study, when they look things up. I had a lady yesterday refer to Dr. Google. Well, what is wrong with sorting through information? Yeah, there's a lot of times you'll get just outlandish, over-the-top information about, for example, a nutritional remedy that it, you know, will grow your hair back if you're 95 years old and you've been bald for 60 years, and you can add 1,000,000% of testosterone. Some of that stuff is just, it's just a sales pitch. And I do my very best to be as forthcoming and direct and honest as possible. I don't want anybody thinking that I'm trying to over-exaggerate. Now, yes, it's true. I do have a bias. But I am trying to tell you about things that actually are good for the body, that help get the body back into good working order or get it back to good repair without destroying other systems. So many times when I look up even some of the new drugs that have come out, you just see pages and pages of documents of all the horrific side effects. Now, my problem is very, very rarely does an individual have a explanation or given full disclosure on how bad some of those drugs are. And but you know what? We have to come to terms with that. If you feel horrible, you know, maybe it's the medication you're taking. Okay, article number one this morning. This one to me is interesting. And I'm not trying to make it say more than it should because I'm looking at the data, but I do find it intriguing because, you know, a lot of times when it comes to health and healing and keeping your body in good repair, it's really going to be the sum total of all the little things you do. So I'm not trying to say, and this is just an example, that if you, if you drink 8 glasses of water every day, that's a guarantee that you can never get sick. However, if we look at the studies on that, everybody understands the idea of being well hydrated as compared to dehydrated. You may remember that the very first organ that goes or malfunctions when you're dehydrated is your brain. It's also the last one to come back online and become fully hydrated. So, yeah, you can see an older person when they're dehydrated, they get a little bit wonky. And they don't think clearly, or maybe they're hallucinating. But if they were well hydrated, there's a good chance they wouldn't. So this one to me is interesting right here. There was a comment made by an individual this week, and they were talking about wrinkles forming on their face, and it kind of got me to thinking, so I said, hey, I wonder if I can find an article about that. Okay, here goes. Now, I realize there's going to be a whole lot of women listening that they just cannot stand this topic of eating chocolate. But I've got to do diligence here, and I have to do my duty and responsibility to give the truth accurately. Okay, here we go. You know I'm joking about that, but that's what the article's about. It's, I cut the article off too soon, but I've got the gist of it right here. I probably should have copied 2 more pages, but sometimes I just get tired of reading the numbers and details, and I know y'all don't want to see the charts. Anyway, a daily dose of 12 grams of phenol-rich cacao, that might be the ingredient that makes up chocolate, keeps your skin young. Korean dermatologist at the Seoul National University Boramae Hospital, they discovered that cacao, just think chocolate, like the 91% cacao dark chocolate bars, makes women's wrinkles less deep and increases the elasticity of the skin. I think I'm liking this right here. Their human study, published in the Journal of Nutrition, suggests that cacao diminishes the most important component of skin aging, the damage to skin caused by ultraviolet radiation. That means what happens if you're out in the sunlight, or a better way of saying it is, what happens if you get too much sunlight and your skin becomes damaged as a consequence? I know, you've seen plenty of people with sun-damaged skin. it can look pretty bad sometimes. Okay, here's a study right here. The Koreans did their trial with two groups of 31 women. Okay? Now, this was the age group they went with. They went with women that were aged 43, that's pretty young, all the way up to 86. That would be probably an elderly person, right? And the signs of their skin aging could be seen in the corners of their eyes. That's where they used their measurement and microscopic optical detection devices. Okay, one group of women consumed a placebo every day for 24 weeks. Who knows? Maybe it's just chocolate flavoring. The other group, they consumed 12 grams a day of fat-free cacao powder made by the Belgian company Berry Calibo. I'm sure I'm butchering the Belgian gentleman's name. Forgive me. The powder provided the women with 320 milligrams of cacao flavanols each day. The women just simply dissolved the powder in hot water and they drank the mixture. Let me see, what is that called technically? Maybe that's called hot chocolate. And that's, well, it would be the equivalent of taking a 12-gram scoop, which is not really very much. Maybe just like a small spoonful, or maybe a small to medium spoonful of just cocoa powder. And it says, by the way, that the Calibo, the chocolate manufacturer, they didn't fund the study. They just gave them the chocolate, which, isn't that nice of them? The researchers were funded by the Korean government to do the study. Here's the results. The elasticity, and when I say elasticity, I know you know what that means. Maybe an antonym for elasticity would be something like rigid, stiff, not resilient. No, what you want is you want your skin being soft and pliable and flexible and supple, bendable. You don't want it so stiff that it basically breaks or cracks. Maybe that's part of the component of wrinkles. So the elasticity of the skin of the women who had taken the cacao, think, you know, hot chocolate, during the experiment, they increased by a percentage point. And I've already looked at the studies, and it to me, when I look at these graphs over 24 weeks, it looks like it's somewhere between 10% and maybe 12 or 13%, maybe 14% better. I'm just, some of it's maybe 15% better. I've got several graphs here I'm looking at. I mean, so there's a significant noticeable improvement. In the placebo group, the women's skin elasticity decreased and their wrinkles became a little bit deeper. Well, I kind of wondered to myself, what if you did this every day for a year? What would that look like? Because when I look at the graphs, there is a consistent improvement the longer that you take it. And they started, then they did a follow-up test at 12 weeks, then they did one at 24. But it's improving across the board. See, that kind of plays into the idea of, what would happen to a person if they were really consistent? Over time, would they see greater results if they did it for a year instead of 24 weeks? Well, here's the mechanism. At the end of the supplementation period, the researchers exposed the women's skin to ultraviolet light. Basically, they're trying to burn the skin. And they measured the intensity at which the skin started to be damaged. So what they did was they tried to see if they could give the women a sunburn. The intensity at which this started happened to be significantly higher in the women who had consumed cacao than the women in the placebo group. What that means is, what the women that took the chocolate for 12 to 24 weeks, they could endure so much more radiation from the sun without showing signs of wrinkling compared to women that didn't have the chocolate or the cacao. Does that make sense? They go on to say, and this ain't rocket science, the most important component in skin aging is damage caused by ultraviolet radiation. Scientists call this photoaging. Everybody knows what that is. It seems that the phenols in the cacao inhibit this crucial process. You mean you're telling me that chocolate can act as an antioxidant to protect your body from premature aging? Yeah, I think that's what they're trying to say. To me, this would be so interesting if they had like a two-year study. Wouldn't that be something if they actually could... Because you may remember in the past, I read the research on individuals that had ruptured bulging disc in their spine. And you may be thinking to yourself, that's not very common, but I'm telling you, it's real common. All you have to do is just listen to the announcements for those that are sick at a church on a Sunday morning or Sunday evening or maybe Wednesday. Or if you go to Sabbath on a Saturday, when they announce that Sister Jones is getting lower back surgery to repair a ruptured disc, well, that's because she's in massive pain. But the studies are showing now that if somebody is willing to take what's called glucosamine sulfate, maybe mixed with chondroitin sulfate, maybe even MSM, for a period of 20 to 24 months, they're showing incredible reversal of the disc disease. Now, I do realize there's a point where the damage is so great and it's so damaged, like the point of no return, it's beyond repair. Well, there's nothing that repairs that. And I think the example they gave in those studies on glucosamine sulfate is if somebody had basically no disc space at all between the vertebrae and their lower back, there's no cushioning left. Well, those you can't fix. There's like nothing left to work with. That would be like a person that has a hip that's just completely destroyed. Their ball and socket joint is gone. There's no cartilage left. Well, you can't really regrow a lot of cartilage and repair it if it's kind of past the point of no return. Does that make sense? So that's what I find interesting about these studies when it comes to cacao, because it makes your skin more tolerant to the weather and to the light. It becomes less damaged. Now, you tell me, would you like your skin to be in better repair as opposed to being in worse repair? Well, I know the answer to that. Most people, as in 99.9, they do not mind doing things that are good and beneficial to help themselves. At least that's what I think. Yes, there are people that have behaviors where they're destroying themselves, and those are called addictions. Just like I told you last week, that some of the newest studies on smoking marijuana show quite a bit of heart disease from inhaling the smoke into your lungs. That doesn't seem illogical to me. Sounds like it makes sense. But they have a much higher occurrence of having a stroke if they smoke marijuana. You can't overlook stuff like that. You just have to wonder, is there a negative side to it? Well, okay, there you go. Anyway, the present study showed that 24 weeks of daily consumption of cacao or coca flavonoids improve skin wrinkles and elasticity in human beings. It said the skin elasticity began to improve after 12 weeks of supplementation, and the effect was maintained while supplementation continued for 24 weeks. Now, obviously, they didn't use any men in the study, but I would venture a guess. You would find that if it helps women's skin to become more elastic, and the wrinkles were going away, well, what does that tell you? So that's an option right there. I don't think I ever complain when somebody says, Dr. Morgan, can I have like the dark chocolate? Of course you can. And actually, the dark chocolate, if I move away from the skin and talk about the arteries, well, what has it been shown to do? It increases your lifespan. So people that eat the dark chocolate, they tend to live significantly longer than those that don't. So it kind of begs the question, does chocolate maybe have some unique component to it that might be beneficial for a human being? And the answer is yes. So anything that helps your arteries, actually I could start over here and say, do you want your skin stiff? No. Then that's where cacao makes it more flexible. And that's a good thing. Well, a person is only going to live as long as they have healthy blood flow and healthy circulation. And so the dark chocolate or the cacao has been shown to greatly, because there's a compound in there, if you want to call them cacao flavonoids or phenols or polyphenols, it's probably something similar to that. Sometimes I use the word phenol or flavonoid just to indicate that there is a natural substance that's found in the dark chocolate that plays a role in influencing human health for the better. So if I say smoking cigarettes tends to have a negative effect on human health, that would be true. Or if you said, what about high blood sugar, Dr. Morgan? Is that good? No, you don't live near as long. So anyway, that's the article right there on cacao or chocolate, but I thought that was interesting right there. You'll have to tell me what you think about that. This next one right here, well, I mean, I think we just have to kind of run toward this and deal with it. I don't want to be in denial. I want to go ahead and give you information where you can make decent choices about how you're going to live your life. But this is one thing that I think that we have to come to terms with. Now, in my mind, I'm thinking about what a woman told me back in the middle 1990s. I'll just say her name begins with the letter K. Because I remember this conversation, but she said, she was telling me that a drug salesperson or a pharmaceutical rep had dropped by their place of business. It was in Frankston, by the way. And in this place of business, the drug salesman was saying, we have a new drug. It's about to come online. They're doing the final stages of these drug trials and studies, and it's proven to be the most fabulous medication of all time. But basically, she was saying it's a complete cure for Alzheimer's. You know what Alzheimer's is. Somebody loses their ability to remember things, and cognitively they don't function that great, and they can't really care for their basic needs like they used to, and a lot more stuff with that. There's actually some things that are just so abnormal, but anyway. But she was saying, because she was asking me a question about her husband, and he was at the beginning stages of Alzheimer's, but it was so bad that, you know, she could go to work every day, but all she could do is just take him, and he would sit in a chair, watch TV all day long. I think this was before we had laptop computers, and people spent their entire day looking at the Internet, which that's a different point, but I think that's bizarre also. But she was saying, Dr. Morgan, we don't need to use natural remedies. There's going to be a new drug that comes out. Well, you already know the answer to it. You're asking yourself, well, did the drug ever come out? No. No. I think maybe on 30 different occasions, either I have read an article, or I have looked at a study, or there was a drug trial that was going on, and I tried to read as much as I could about it, about a new drug to cure Alzheimer's. Well, you know every one of those has completely failed. There's nothing. Folks, a lot of times Alzheimer's is a good 40 years in the making, and there's a lot of factors and moving parts to it. It's not just as simple as one factor. But how do you undo 40 years worth of damage by just applying a drug? To me, that doesn't even make sense. Folks, you have to address the root causes of the problem. If you do not address the root causes and the reasons why it would form in the first place, then I don't know what hope we have to ever prevent it from, you know, developing in the first place. Okay, I came across this article right here. And it's very simple, very straightforward, and the title of the article is, at least in abstract, is Less Carbs, Better Memory. Now, you may be asking me, what is a carb? Well, a carb is just a short terminology for carbohydrates. So, for example, if you take a teaspoon of sugar, and you put it in your mouth, and you suck on it, and you say, wow, that's sweet. Well, that's sugar or carbohydrates. Does that make sense? So carbohydrates, they're not the same as protein. They're not anything like fat. Everything in the human body has a different usage. But one of the forms of energy that your body makes from carbohydrates would be called glucose. And glucose is fuel for cells. And it's actually essential to life. I don't think I've ever heard of a human being that got to a glucose level of zero. That's just a joke. Obviously, that doesn't happen. But I've seen a whole lot of people have car wrecks and black out when that blood sugar dropped way too low. I mean, you cannot function without feeding the central nervous system or your brain glucose. Well, here's the article right here. And I really want you to tell me what you think about this. Because in this article, just like I read about the chocolate, you've got something that you can put into practice now to help yourself. And that's really where you're going to get the biggest bang for the buck. You have to become your own advocate. You have to do what's best for you. If you're waiting for a doctor to tell you what to do, well, you may wake up one day and find out the disease is fully developed, and now all they can do is offer you massive pharmaceutical drugs, procedures that you do not like or do not want, and surgical procedures to correct something that should have been corrected a long time ago. Anyway, here's a study right here. A diet from which you derive energy mainly from fats and proteins and not from carbohydrates, it's been shown to improve memory function in elderly people. Neuroscientists from the University of Cincinnati write about this in an article that has been published in a journal called Neurobiology of Aging. Well, I think I like the sound of this so far. Here it is right here. What about the idea of a person having dementia as it relates to their diet? Well, here goes. Alzheimer's and dementia are slowly becoming common diseases as a result of the aging population. And scientists are searching for ways to slow down the looming epidemic. What they're saying is, it's growing by leaps and bounds. More and more people are losing their ability to function normally, mentally, emotionally, physically. Studies have shown that people with continuously raised insulin and glucose levels are more likely to show mental deterioration as they age. How do you know what your glucose level is? Well, if you go to a doctor and they do a standard comprehensive metabolic panel, they might go, Mr. Smith, your blood glucose is exactly 81. Well, that's an excellent number. Now, what if they say, Mr. Smith, your glucose is 116? Nothing to see here. Well, I don't know if that would be correct. If your blood sugar fasting is 116, that means you're almost a diabetic. The correct definition of diabetes is when they take two fasting glucose readings and they measure 126 and above. You don't want that. Bad stuff happens to the human body when your blood sugar stays elevated. Researchers suspect that our industrial diet, in which a large part of the caloric intake comes from mainly fast food or carbohydrates. You do know that if you go for fast food, it's mainly very high carbohydrates and sugar. It's one of the, they're saying it's one of the drivers behind the tremendous increase in the incidence of Alzheimer's and dementia. Here's a study right here. The researchers from Cincinnati, they wondered whether a diet that is low in carbohydrates might actually help the brains of the elderly to work better. Well, I think that's a good experiment. So they did an experiment with 23 elderly subjects. Average age was 70. I don't like that age because it sounds very close to 60. But anyway, moving right along. Who noticed they had started to become forgetful? So what they did was they took people that noticed that already my memory is not as sharp as it should be. And so they used those in the experimental group. I like that. The researchers divided their subjects into two groups. One of the group was just given a normal diet for 6 weeks, in which most of the energy was provided by carbohydrates. That would be a high-carb diet. That's probably also the standard American diet. The other group got a diet containing very few carbohydrates. We're going to call that one the low-carbohydrate diet. And the low-carb diet, sometimes it can be referred to as a ketogenic diet. Ketogenic here refers to a diet which results in the release of ketones. Ketones are released when the body switches over to burning fat for fuel instead of carbohydrates. It says here ketones are broken bits of fatty acids and the body likes using them for energy. Maybe as a side point, the brain cells themselves. If you don't give them glucose, they can start converting fat into ketones, and they can use that as a source of energy. Okay. The test subjects tried to stick to a daily intake of 20 grams of carbs per day, but I'm looking at the chart, and they didn't always quite get there, which means they had some days they had quite a few more carbs than other days, but they did pretty well overall. They made an effort. And let me just be encouraging here. It really works out if you just make an effort. Nobody expects perfection out of you. That's a little bit too, that's a hard standard to measure up to, but they did pretty well. So just before the start and just after the end of the six-week period, the researchers tested their subjects' memory functions. And I'm looking here, and I meant to look this up, but I didn't. But they had a form of learning called paired associate learning. I really wanted to give you the precise scientific definition, but I forgot to look it up. And they looked at what's called verbal memory. Well, guess what happens when somebody eats a low-carb diet? All of a sudden, there's a significant improvement in their memory. The brain performs better. They can remember names and dates, and they don't have to struggle for words. A lady, what day was this? This was Wednesday morning. She walked in my office, and I haven't seen her probably in like 15 years, but she says, "Do you know who I am?" I said, "Yes." "Your name is Diane." And she says, "Do you know who I am?" I said, "Yes, ma'am, I know who you are." And she says, "Well, who are you?" And I said, I told her my name, and she said, "You look so much younger." And I'm going, well, in 15 years, I should look a whole lot older. And that's just one of the realities. Nobody escapes this earth without aging and eventually dying. We're very, very finite. We're not designed to live for eternity in this earthen vessel. But here it is in a nutshell. I'm looking at the charts, and of course you can't see it, but they're measuring two things here. They're measuring a hormone, which is a very powerful hormone in the human body. It's called insulin. Insulin has a lot to do with your health. But when insulin is very high, the memory, the performance of your mind and your memory, it goes down. It does not do well. So what they demonstrated when somebody switched over to a low-carbohydrate diet, and probably when you're on a low-carb diet, you're probably going to be focusing on eating, I hate to call it like a carnivore, but you're just eating meat that has like protein and fat. So if that ended up being fish or chicken or eggs or beef, that's probably what they're talking about right there. But what that does is if you're not eating all those starches and grains and carbohydrates that would lead to diabetes and inflammation, well, what happens is your body is kind of forced to converting fat into energy. It's called ketones. But across the board, it shows as insulin goes down, learning, brain performance, and your memory goes up. You do so much better. I think I'd be foolish if I didn't pay attention to this. It says the lower the insulin level, the higher the scores. And that means the performance of the ability of the brain to learn new things and to remember. Kind of important, huh? I do know this. If you try to read the Bible, you have to put effort into it. Yes, there is a few disgusting human beings out there that have photographic memories and they read it once. I am not one of those. I have to put effort into it. Sometimes I have to look at something many, many, many times before I can figure out what it's saying. It says the effect was even stronger when the amount of ketones in the urine of the low-carb diet was measured. That's where you could take like a urinary dipstick. You're just trying to evaluate, am I on the right track here by reducing my carbs, eating more protein and fat? But you can actually measure ketone bodies in the urine. And so they just showed that it was ketone bodies in the urine were related to mental performance. So just kind of think about that. That's something you could do if you wanted to. And here's the conclusion by the researchers. It looks as though a low-carbohydrate diet protects the brain from aging. The researchers advise caution, however, and I'm just going to quote them. Should this approach prove to be effective and to have benefit beyond the period of intervention, It might be applied intermittently as a preventive strategy, an approach that would mitigate many of the concerns about chronic, severe carbohydrate restriction. Well, that's not a warning that we should worry about. I know you understand this, but it is so difficult for an individual to accept a new idea if they're totally devoted to their current way of life. Like if somebody's addicted to sugar and that's all they eat, oh, that's just nearly impossible to get them to kind of buy into this as being a plausible remedy. Okay, I just looked at the clock and it's right at 7:30. If you want to call me and ask a question, now's your chance to do that. And so I want to offer you the opportunity to call in, ask a question, make a comment, whatever you like is fine. This program is Health Essentials. I think it's pretty straightforward and obvious. We're looking for the very best way to help your body function better. That's why I cover that topic about eating the dark chocolate or the dark cacao and improvement in skin and low carbohydrates improving the brain. Those are two easy things you can do. Good morning and welcome to the program.
The dark chocolate or the dark cacao.
Hello. You may have to turn the radio off.
Okay, I'm trying.
That's all right. You're doing great.
Okay, I got it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for taking my question. I heard you
you're so welcome.
Last week about cherries for your low numbers for the kidney count or kidney failure.
Yes, ma'am.
And when I was looking at my own blood work and mine, instead of it giving me a specific number, it says greater than 60.
Yeah, they didn't give you a number. We just know it's higher than 60. That could be 61 or it could be 120.
Well, that was my question. What do I need to ask for the next time I have blood work in order to get a better reading there?
Well, you just have to say, I need the actual number on the GFR. Just give me a number.
Okay.
We can look at it a different way. If you were to go up above that reading, there's going to be a marker called creatinine. Do you see that? Creatinine?
Yes.
What does that say?
It says 0.72.
Okay, that's a pretty good number right there. There's another acronym that relates to the kidneys. It's called BUN. That stands for blood urea nitrogen. What is that number?
It says 16.
That's pretty good. So here's the one thing that every human being is going to have to face. It's a topic called inflammation. One of the jobs of your kidneys is to remove waste and debris. I think I'm going to call it metabolic waste. If you are a professional mechanic, aren't you?
No, sir.
But you know what would happen? As long as you can get oxygen and gas or diesel into the engine, you can produce energy, right?
Yes.
And so if you breathe oxygen and you eat food, you're just going to give off the normal amount of metabolic waste from processing the food, kind of like a diesel. They have exhaust that comes out the backside. And so the kidneys, they play a pretty powerful role in helping to clear that waste and debris out. They're very sophisticated filters. So a lot of times, one of the signs that the kidneys may not be working as well as they should is you just have aches and pains somewhere in the body or stiffness. Or do you feel pretty good?
I do feel pretty good. I have problems with my knees. They're not as strong as they should be, but everything else is doing good.
Excellent. Well, I think what I was referring to is I've seen a correlation between eating the frozen cherries or the dark cherries and a result in the body has less inflammation. I really think that there's cause and effect. But I've seen many, many people that when they ate cherries, there's a flavonoid compound. I think it's called anthocyanidine. I'm sure I'm butchering the pronunciation. But when you consume that, your body actually uses that in a good way to kind of keep everything in good repair. So, yeah, that may be the weakness that you have right now is you need to work on strengthening your knees. But at least that's doable.
Right. Also, you mentioned the frozen cherries. Are they, is that better than like fresh cherries or dried cherries?
Well, I believe that the frozen ones are going to have the very best nutritional density. They're going to have more of the good stuff in them. And do you mind if I tell you why?
Yes, go ahead.
When you get fresh cherries in the store, let's just say you go into Brookshire's on a Saturday and you say, I'm going to go straight to the produce section. I'm looking for fresh cherries. Well, when they pick those cherries, they're not, yeah, they're fresh, I guess, but they're not ripened yet. And for all I know, it may take 5 weeks to go from the cherry orchard in Oregon or Washington State or Michigan all the way to the store in, you know, Mineola. So the longer that a picked fruit sits around at room temperature, the more it begins to deteriorate and lose its nutritional value. Just kind of like if you bought some broccoli and it was fresh, what's that going to be like if you try to eat it like a week and a half later? It's going to lose some of its potency. Does that make sense?
Yes.
The frozen cherries, they can only pick those and harvest them when they're fully ripened on the vine. So they literally have the most nutrients, whether that's vitamins, minerals, flavonoids, phenols, anthocyanidines, all these things, they're at their highest concentration. So they pick them, wash them, pit them, and freeze them. And that locks in the nutrient density. So I think you're getting the biggest bang for the buck from the frozen ones. That's just my opinion. And I'm not trying to say the dried ones are bad, but these are all of them to be beneficial to you.
That's a good explanation. I have one other question. Is there a supplement that's healthy that would help control the appetite?
Yeah, but it's gross. You want me to tell you what it is?
Yes.
Okay. All right. There's a shrub or a bush that grows in certain regions of India. It just grows really well. It's called Gymnema sylvestri. Maybe that's just the scientific name of it. But for short, it's called Gymnema. So if a person told me, I absolutely cannot tolerate living without sugar, it just calls my name, I'm addicted to it, I can't stop it. And I've used this many, many times for people that are addicted to nicotine products and to drugs such as alcohol, and it works like a champ. But here's what you do. If you find Gymnema, do you want me to spell that for you?
Yes.
Okay. G-Y-M, like I'm going to go to the gym, Nema, N-E-M-A, but it's just one word, Gymnema. So if you find that in tablet form and it's concentrated, all you do is it's a timing, it's having an organized plan on how you're going to attack this, but here's how it works. I'm just going to make up a story. Let's just say that one of your girlfriends and you go out to eat, and she says, oh my goodness, I can't wait to eat dessert. They have the greatest chocolate double fudge cheesecake of all time with extra chocolate. And you're going, that's probably the last thing I need. I don't want to crave all that boatload of sugar. But what you would do is, before you give in to that craving, is you take a tablet of the Gymnema and you place it on your tongue and you just suck on it for about 2 to 3 minutes. I can almost guarantee you that will totally kill your desire to eat sugar. You just won't want it.
Okay.
So I've used that before when somebody says, Dr. Morgan, I can't stop. And you know what? Here's usually how it happens. Sometimes a person will just kind of tell me out of the blue, and you know, a lot of times I'm curious. But if I ask a person, how much alcohol do you drink? Because, you know, you just kind of get a sense that they do. And they might say, Dr. Morgan, you just don't even know how hard this is for me. And I'm going, I'm so sorry. But you know what? I remember what it was like as a kid and alcohol. Anyway, if they say, I do really well all day long, but it's the moment that I get off work, that's when I start thinking about, when can I get my next drink? When can I get the alcohol? So if a person took a tablet of Gymnema and they said, okay, I'm fixing to get in my pickup truck and I'm leaving work and I'm going to head to the house, if they start sucking on that gymnema, if all you can do is just discipline yourself to suck on the gymnema tablet for about 2 to 3 minutes, that usually is enough to help break the cycle where that intense craving for alcohol begins to diminish. I'm not saying you don't have to do your part. If you drive straight to the bar, you're kind of asking for it, aren't you? You don't want to put yourself in a situation to fail. Right. You know what I mean, don't you?
Right.
I could say that differently with the rest of us. I could say, if you're going to go to the candy store, you know, when you're craving sugar, probably not the best place to hang around. It'd be the idea you're asking to be tempted, right? And so to avoid that temptation, you just don't need to be at the candy shop in the first place. And so sucking on gymnema is one of those things that over about a 10-day to 2-week period, to me, it's proven to be extremely beneficial at helping to break that addictive cycle. Another one that I would think of, if I can I just have free license here to talk?
Sure.
There's a creeping vine or a flower. It's called passion flower. I think they're pretty. They got this purple color to them. They have a very unusual pistil with the pollen on the end of it. I just think it's a very interesting flower. It's so interesting. Passion flower is one of those things that can greatly help a person when they have a certain palpable level of anxiety over eating carbohydrates. So sometimes...
That's the problem. It's the carbs.
Well, I'm not laughing at you. Don't you think that every fast food restaurant, they know exactly what they're doing? The more sugar and chemicals they put in the food, the more you're going to say, you know, I was just there 2 hours ago, but I think I'm really craving to go back and get some more of that. Yeah, they know what they're doing. But it's so addictive. I mean, I don't have any problem saying maybe sugar is actually more addictive than, you know, speed or crack cocaine. It's just the way it is. But passion flower is one of those that really can help break that cycle of addiction with some people. I don't know about you, but I just kind of look around and see people as being highly anxious all the time. Not all of them, but a lot of them.
Yeah. Right. Is that something that you could get in tea or like a passion flower tea?
Absolutely you can. And so if you got some passion flower tea, who knows, drinking that all day long, you might go, oh my goodness, I'm feeling kind of calm. I like this. I'm not nervous or jittery. I don't have this intense craving to go grab a donut or a Coke. But that might be the sort of...
Yes. Yeah, that sounds really good, because I really think it's the, excuse me, the, you know, anxiety of listening to the news all day.
I know.
What's going on in the world. And then...
What is the scariest thing that you hear on the news to you? Or what is it that you hear on the news that disturbs you the most?
Well, just, you know, what's happening in Israel and the news from around the world. You know, it just seems like I just wish, you know, I could do something to help. But
what would you like to see happen in the world right now?
Well, you know, having peace would be good. You know, no.
How do you think they're going to find peace? What's the solution to finding peace?
Well, I guess part of the anxiety is I don't think that both parties are willing to, you know, come to terms, peaceful terms. So
no, they're not. Not right now. I think the only solution the world has right now is to come and submit humbly before God and say, we'll do what you want us to do instead of what we want to do.
Exactly. Exactly. I totally agree.
And it may be that there's quite a lack of humility and submissiveness to be obedient to God around the world.
Exactly, right. And that's what I pray for.
Well, that's really a beautiful prayer, and I'm so glad you're doing that. But I think that's like a positive thought. We can pray. But yes, I would love it if we could all, myself included, humble ourselves, submit to God, and do what's best for Him. And can I tell you where that comes from? Do you remember when Jesus was in the garden? Didn't He say, I don't want to do this. Is there any other way but not let this cup pass from me? But didn't he say, not my will but thine? There's my example right there to follow. If I just do that, not my will but God's will.
Yes, sir.
I will tell you this. Exactly. I'm going to do everything I can to try to convince you of two or three points. Number one, okay. if you set your mind like flint that you're going to try to eat more protein, I think that's going to have such a positive effect on the hormonal function of your body. And number two, I want you to eat sugar, but the form that I want to give you is called berries. So if it ends up being cherries, strawberries, blackberries, raspberries, did I mention strawberries earlier? what about blueberries? But yeah, if you do that, those actually have the, so if you can get your sweet tooth satisfied by eating a bowl of raspberries or like blueberries, you're so much, and plus they have all these nutrients, they're so good for the body. I think it's been a while since I've done research on that topic, but I remember Dr. James Joseph years ago was looking at what are the foods that have the highest longevity with people, and blueberries were right there on the list, meaning when people eat blueberries, they tend to outperform people that eat blueberry-flavored Pop-Tarts. The Pop-Tarts aren't really real blueberries. That's just sugar. Probably sugar in blue and purple dye.
Right.
So if you could do those two things, if you could just convince yourself, I am going to make a plan that when I'm hungry for sugar, I'm going to eat a bowl of strawberries, then we can break the cycle. But what I told you about the herb called gymnema, I think it's a very, very valid experiment for what you're going through. And that's probably the way I want to promote it to you. All these things are experiments, but nobody's harmed by eating, you know, raspberries or cherries that I've seen. I did have four patients last week that were rushed to the emergency room with a blueberry overdose, but I'm willing to just call that a fluke and overlook that. I mean, it all happened on Tuesday. I don't know what happened.
Well, this has been very helpful.
So good. I hope so.
So much.
Well, thank you for your phone call today. You have a great day, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. There's a phone line open again. The number here at the station is 903-589-8507. And if you want to call me and ask a question, this is your opportunity to do so. This program is called Health Essentials, and we'll go back to the phone lines here. Good morning, and welcome to the program. Hello, how are you?
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you great. You're doing excellent.
Okay, fine. Thank you. I have three questions. I'll try to be fast. One, what would you do for Barrett's esophagus?
Can I just answer that one real quick?
Oh, sure.
All right, let's take off. All right, you have what's called your mouth, which is attached to the esophagus. So when you drink water or coffee or tea or you eat a bowl of strawberries, you swallow and it goes down from the back of your mouth or your palate down the esophagus into the stomach, right?
Yes.
So it has to cross through the diaphragm, and there's a round ring-like muscle called the sphincter muscle. That's known as the cardiac sphincter. If the cardiac sphincter loses its tone, what that means is if you eat food and you lay down to go to sleep and all of a sudden you get this backwash or back pressure in your stomach and all these volatile organic acids go up and start burning your esophagus, that would be one of the conditions that would lead to Barrett's esophagitis. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You're just chronically using your own stomach acid, just burning the crap out of your esophagus. Mm-hmm. That's not good. That's inflammation that never goes away. So here's something I'm going to tell you that's going to sound very weird, but I want you to just at least prayerfully consider this information as being maybe correct. All right. One of the things that causes Barrett's esophagitis is your stomach is not producing enough acid. And you're probably thinking, that didn't even make sense because it's all this acid that's causing my problem. Well, you've got to have a threshold, the Goldilocks just right amount of acid. in order for that cardiac sphincter to close all the way. Like I was talking to a lady the other day. She told me what was on her mind. She says, what you say doesn't even make sense. Why would I want to take apple cider vinegar before every meal if I already have heartburn? How's that going to fix it? And I said, well, if you can just try vinegar, see if that's enough to improve the closing of that valve. Because if it closes, you won't get any of that acidic backwash come up in your esophagus and burn you. And she goes, that doesn't make sense, but I'll try it. And a week later, she's got no more heartburn or acid reflux or esophagitis. It's gone. Just with vinegar. And so that was a simple experiment. Point number two.
Yes. So about one tablespoon before me, how much?
Yes, but dilute it, though. A tablespoon is just fine. If you want to put that in a cup of tea or herbal tea or water, that would be a good amount. Sometimes I get good results with one teaspoon, sometimes two, and then tablespoons, three teaspoons. So that's fine. Just dilute it in water or tea first.
Yes.
Number next.
Okay.
I've always seen a high correlation to allergies to wheat causing Barrett's esophagitis. I don't even know how many hundreds of people I've seen with it, but it's just disappeared and gone away once they stop eating wheat. So those are the answers to the first question. Well, at least you can consider it. Yeah.
Yes, and the second one, isn't dark chocolate harmful for Barrett's because it contains caffeine, and I've been warned about caffeine consumption with Barrett's esophagus.
Yeah, and this is really the same topic, but the problem is that cardiac sphincter, if it loses its tone or its grip on the contents of the stomach, that's when you get all your problems, because it's like a volcano blowing its lava up in your throat. I'm making an analogy about lava and stomach acid being the same. Anyway, in some people, yes. And so some people, if they chew a lot of gum, if they drink a lot of Cokes, if they drink a lot of coffee, or if they have chocolate or greasy food or peppermint or spearmint, it can cause a weakening. Not everybody. So it's one of those things, if you have a little bit of dark chocolate and it has no negative consequences, then you're fine. But if every time you eat chocolate you have acid reflux, you're going, I think I'm going to learn my lesson. Don't eat chocolate. So does that answer the question?
Okay. It sure does.
Okay.
Thank you. And the last one was, I have seen a product displayed in health food stores called Neem, N-E-E-M, and I'm wondering if that is the same thing as that Gymnema herb that you mentioned earlier.
No, it is not.
Okay,
those are two different things.
Is Neem a good thing to take? Is Neem a good thing to
take? Neem is one of the things they use when they're making, I started to say insecticides. I meant to say like a natural bug repellent. So a lot of times if you have a natural bug spray that doesn't have all the toxic chemicals in them, it might have neem oil, it may have citronella, maybe lemon oil, eucalyptus, stuff like that. All those work pretty well. But no, neem is a specific plant. A lot of times people use that for allergies and for other issues. But Gymnema, it has one less E in it. Neem is N-E-E-M. Gymnema is G-Y-M-N-E-M-A, I think.
Okay.
I'll have to check my spelling when I get back to the office. Okay.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you so much.
You betcha.
I appreciate the information.
I can't wait to find out what happens. Hey, thanks, buddy. I appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Okay.
All right, if you'd like to join me on the air, there's a little bit of time left, about four and a half minutes. Plenty of time for a phone call. 903-589-8507. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Shoot.
You're okay. It's all good. Hi, how are you today, ma'am? I could hear your voice in the background. You're on the air if you want to ask me a question. Okay, I don't think that she understood that she was on the air. But we can try again, though. If you want to call me, I won't delay. I'll just push the button. I'll get you right in. 903-589-8507. And I'll be glad to answer any questions you want. Can I go? Okay, here we go. We'll try again. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. I have just two questions I hope that you can help me with.
Okay.
The first one, and you touched on it earlier, about drinking the water. I have been told that while it's good for the body, just drinking water doesn't always hydrate the body cells.
Right.
And that you should add a little bit of salt to your water.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, and now I'm hearing about the hydrated water that's provided here in town that you can purchase. What are your thoughts about that?
I don't know anything about that, but let me explain what I find that works really well over and over again. If you had a one-gallon container and you put a small can of the frozen grape juice Concord concentrate, like you can buy at the frozen fruit department of the grocery store.
Uh-huh.
If you dump that in that 1 gallon of water, you're going to make a very weak diluted grape drink. It's almost like your homemade Gatorade.
Uh-huh.
If you put 2 teaspoons to maybe a tablespoon of salt in that, and you drank a half a gallon a day, that will rehydrate you very, very well.
Okay.
So between the minerals and the little bit of sugar in the grape juice, that will help push the water into your cells so they can actually work like fabulous engines and batteries for you.
Okay. I wrote all of that down. So my second question has to do with adding cinnamon to your coffee grounds. I've heard that that helps to regulate your insulin.
Oh, yes, ma'am. That's a good idea.
I'm doing that, too. What do you think about that?
I think that's like a splendid idea. I'm really proud of you for doing it.
Well, I've been trying it for a while. I've been going to the health store and getting Ceylon. But now I'm also hearing that there could be lead in the cinnamon. So I guess you have to be careful with what you buy.
You know, the story that I read that I found so interesting is in Vietnam, they grow cinnamon trees, the real ones. And what they do is when they have a daughter that's born, they take about 5 acres of land and they plant cinnamon trees. And when she gets married, they give it to her as a wedding gift, which means she'll be rich the rest of her life just selling the cinnamon bark.
Okay.
But yeah, if the soil that the cinnamon trees are grown in is full of lead, you're just asking for it.
Okay.
And it may be a good idea to find it. Just type into the computer which brands of cinnamon contains the highest lead or heavy metals.
Yeah.
That's what I would do to try to figure it out.
Okay. Well, that's my two questions, and thank you for taking time.
You're welcome, and I really like your cinnamon story. That's great. Keep up the good work.
Okay. Thank you. Goodbye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. You know what? If every human being... You know, I find this so interesting. There's many schools of thought on this, and I want to err on the side where you get the biggest bang for the buck, or it proves to be the most accurate or the best. But the idea of having a super bland diet where you never consume any salt or any pepper, you don't use anything that's spicy, you don't sprinkle any aromatic, flavorful herbs like... or spices like cinnamon or nutmeg. Are you kidding me? If I start doing like a literature search right now, you're going to find out all these things like cinnamon are so valuable to the human body. The body works so much better. So what I want to compel you to consider is keep your body in good working order by consuming spices or herbal teas. Anyway, we're officially out of time. Lord willing, I will be back this time next week.